All right, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to a Thursday afternoon News and Focus podcast. We were out last Thursday because of our men's conference. There are four messages up on the website from that conference. Pastor Bill, Pastor, and myself, and Rob Scott out of Niagara Falls, New York, spoke. And we'd love for you to check those messages out. 2016 Men's Conference. Joey, tell us about the article. Where'd you find it, and why are you recommending it today to our audience?
Well, I found it on Facebook through a person that I follow. It's Christianity Today. It's by Andy Crouch. I believe Billy Graham founded Christianity Today many moons ago. And basically, he's asking evangelical Christians to not vote for Trump and thereby sending a message to him that you can't act that way and expect us to support you as president.
And who is Andy Crouch? Does anybody know in particular who this guy is?
I think he's just a staff writer at... He's executive editor at Christianity Today.
All right. All right, Brian, let's get started.
As a nonprofit journalistic organization, Christianity Today is doubly committed to staying neutral regarding political campaigns. The law requires it. We serve our readers best when we give them information and analysis they need to make their own judgments. We can never collude when idolatry becomes manifest, especially when it demands our public allegiance. Just because we are neutral, however, does not mean we are indifferent. We are especially not indifferent when the gospel is at stake. The gospel is of infinitely greater importance than any campaign, and one good summary of the gospel is Jesus is Lord.
Is that enough?
No, it's not. It's not enough.
It's not a good summary.
That's not a 1 Corinthians 15 summary of the gospel.
I understand his point. Yeah. But I just don't know that it's enough. But I would say that he's absolutely right that the American Evangelical Church has pretty much lost its understanding and focus on the gospel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's saying it one good summary, so I guess the suggestion is there's more, and I think the idea he's trying to get across there is, we need to be aligned with Jesus long before we're aligned with a political party.
Yeah, his emphasis on kurios, that Jesus is the master, he's the owner, he's the sovereign. And but most churches don't care about that.
No.
And that's pretty evident in the fact that evangelicals did not withdraw their support of Trump. A couple did. Wayne Grudem did. Mm-hmm. He publicly went. James McDonald, he's out of Chicago. He's got that mega
Harvest Chapel.
Right. He did. But for the most part, these comments that Trump meant were just swept underneath the rug.
Yeah, I've seen plenty on social media in the last week still supporting him. So
it's really frustrating because in my mind, if I could just shake people and say, if you feel you have to vote for the guy, fine, vote for him. But please, for the love of the gospel, stop defending the man publicly. Please, just don't say anything else about him. He's an awful person. Everything that we know about him, why in the world are we trying to defend this man? If you think that he's better than Hillary and your conscience says vote for him, then vote for him. But please don't defend him publicly, especially as a Christian, someone who publicly professes the name of Christ.
Brian.
The true Lord of the world reigns even now, far above any earthly ruler. His kingdom is not of this world, but glimpses of its power and grace can be found over all the world. One day, his kingdom, and his only, will be the standard by which all earthly kingdoms are judged. Following that judgment day, every knee will bow in heaven, on earth, and under the earth. And his reign is fully realized in the renewal of all things.
I think that some Christians would not agree with that first sentence. We had one here a while back.
Yep.
And although all would agree with the last statement that, one day we'll see every knee bow and every tongue confess, there are some that disagree, and I think that's why he said the good summary of the gospel is that Jesus, and he was running to the Lord portion, because he wants to say that Jesus is truly in charge.
Mm-hmm.
He's the boss, he's the Lord, he's the sovereign, whatever terminology you want to use it, but let's recognize that the reason some of the church struggles is because of really their eschatology, and they don't believe that Jesus is the king now. They believe he will be the king someday, but many don't believe that if you look out into our world structure that Jesus is actually ruling.
Right. We had a, in my, what, my first or second year here? It was really early. What was his name?
I almost said David Jeremiah. It was the other Jeremiah. He's really focused on end times, has a radio spot on every day.
Yeah, and he tells us what's going on in Jerusalem and the latest thing to try to get you hyped up about it.
I'll think of it in a minute.
Okay. But in any case, his contention was that Christ is not ruling, that he's mediating, but not ruling.
And I was very shocked by that, because that is a very extreme fallout of the chart that we all grew up with.
But when you think about Peter and Acts 2, and Christ died for you, and because he died for you, Jesus rose from the grave, and God exalted him, and he's declared him Lord. And then he quotes Psalm 110, you know, that the Lord said to my Lord, that Jesus is Lord. And yet there is just huge segments of Christianity in which God is not sovereign. He's just not sovereign. He's allowing all kinds of stuff to happen, but he doesn't ordain. He doesn't orchestrate. He just constantly allow. I was on the Got Questions website. You know, you got a question. They were talking about natural disasters and how God allows natural disasters. And there was only a little hint of God ordaining a natural disaster. Just a little hint. We just can't have a God, David, that sends a tornado or sends a hurricane and somebody dies.
Yeah, we like our God to be conveniently sovereign. You know, sovereign in blessing, sovereign in our prosperity, sovereign in the good things that happen in our lives, but not at all sovereign in the disasters that come our way.
Sure, and the kind of the contrast right now is like Hurricane Katrina. Well, maybe that was judgment on that wicked city of New Orleans. Well, was this judgment on North Carolina?
I mean, we can't throw it out altogether.
Yeah, and there's just that, but that surely not our state.
No. Yeah.
There's no way that God would do that to us.
No, because one of our church members got affected by it, and because it's a church member and he's a loving Christian, then that couldn't be God. I mean, that's kind of how we work. I was reading through 2 Timothy this morning, because I think I'm going to go there after Ruth, and this is the last night on Ruth. You know, you just can't read 2 Timothy and not see a sovereign God who elects before the foundation of the world. You know, Paul says, I'll do all things for the salvation of the elect, you know. I mean, In 2 Timothy, God's in charge. I mean, like, really in charge. Not like this, he knew what was going to happen in charge. That's the common thing you hear about it. No, he's more than knowing what's going to happen. There's a big difference between knowledge and sovereignty. Mm-hmm. All right, let's continue on. Let's go, John.
This segment is called Prophecy Today, and it's Jimmy DeYoung.
Yep, Jimmy DeYoung. Yep, that's exactly who it was. And I remember Bill confronted him in the chapel on that very issue, because he didn't like the songs we were singing because they emphasized Christ as Lord now. And yet our New Testament makes it clear that he is Lord.
Absolutely.
All right.
The Lordship of Christ places constraints on the way his followers involve themselves or entangle themselves with earthly rulers. On the one hand, we pray for all rulers, and judging from the example of Old Testament exiles like Daniel and New Testament prisoners like Paul, we can even wholeheartedly pray for rulers who directly oppose our welfare. On the other hand, we recognize that all earthly governments partake to a greater or lesser extent in what the Bible calls idolatry, substituting the creation for the Creator and the earthly ruler for the true God.
All right, that is a really good sentence. We recognize that all earthly governments, except ours, of course,
probably, yeah,
partake to a greater or lesser extent in what the Bible calls idolatry. And then he defines idolatry as substituting the creation for the Creator and the earthly ruler for the true God. I don't know if you remember or not, during the men's conference, several times Rob Scott made the point that your wife or your husband cannot be Christ. Cannot be your Christ. Right. Mm-hmm. You should not expect them to be your Christ. You're not going to find all your joy in your husband. You're not going to find all your fulfillment in your wife. You know, that's that whole soulmate idea, David, that my happiness is found in you. Mm-hmm. What happens when he or she dies? What happens when he or she can't do what they used to be able to do? They get ALS, Steve. They turn 70 and sex is no longer pleasurable. What happens then?
They're very unhappy.
Absolutely. That is so true. You don't make me happy anymore.
And you know, that's to a certain extent, that's what our Mennonite brothers and sisters, one of their focuses, that many of the things that we would say we would be okay with, things like hanging pictures of art on our walls and things like this, are actually idolatry because they replaced the creation, the creator with the creation, and they go so far as, you know, it's out there, the creation's out there, God created it for you, so don't paint a picture of it. And, you know, we would, you know, disagree with that in some extents, but, you know, you can see where in the long term, when our society just boils over and over with this whole thing about self-expression and my narrative, it's just driven us to idolatry. And sometimes I wonder if the Amish and the Mennonites, you know, don't have a little bit of wisdom there.
Well, there are lots of days where it seems like it's very appealing. Mm-hmm. Certainly does.
Well, I mean, that sentence sums up, you know, what I've been calling this Fox News Christianity, this patriotism / Christianity mm-hmm. thing, you know, where we lift up the flag and we lift up the country and you know, we love our country, we love the nation, we respect the flag, we have all that, but again, like Rob said, that's not our Christ.
Right.
And we've identified that with the Republican Party, we've identified that with so many different things, and you don't have to look any further than these talking heads, these Rush Limbaughs and Sean Hannitys of the world that are kind of, you know, pseudo-religious, you know, kind of an American sort of religious, but have no concept of the lordship of Christ.
That yeah, you almost get the idea that American Christians, many of them, are focused on saving America, mm-hmm. and yet no other Christians in the rest of the world are focused on saving mm-hmm. America. It's not our primary responsibility.
There's a reason that "Make America Great Again" right. is the slogan.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I would go even further. There, most of them aren't even focused on saving their country.
No.
Most of them
have probably given up hope in that.
That's, and plus, and that's and really, from a biblical perspective, that's a secondary citizenship. Mm-hmm. So that shouldn't be the focus.
You use it when you can use it for your benefit, sure. but it's not, like Paul did. Not your primary focus.
You can't imagine Christians in North Korea praying to God for, you know, if my people who are called by my name shall. You know,
quoting 2 Chronicles 7:14. You know, we need to keep doing that. I mean,
it's endless, David. Yeah. It's just virtually endless.
Yeah.
And you want to jump up and say, "There's no application.
Yeah. Right.
There's no contextual application
right.
whatsoever. Stop the nonsense."
Yeah.
But there's a desire to make it so, and I think that's why we have evangelical Christians defending Trump on what is just virtually indefensible.
Right.
Right. Well, I see this a lot. I'm more concerned about what Trump has said than what Hillary has done. Wait a second. Trump has done some bad stuff. He's bankrupted companies. That means he's not fulfilled his obligation to the people that he owes debts to. He has his own admission. He has had affairs with married women. That's something that he has done that says, this man is not to be trusted. Can you... Well, he's going to appoint all these great Supreme Court justices. Can you trust the man to say that he's going to appoint Supreme Court justices? Ask all the other people that he's wronged if he's actually going to be able to do that, if he's really going to do that. If you can really trust him. Is it really worth sacrificing yourself and the gospel for this man? And at the end of the day, I think we're going to find out that no, it's not. That beating Hillary isn't enough for me to vote for Donald Trump.
And you want to talk about idolatry. This is... The interesting thing about this is it wasn't the registered Democrats that voted in the right. primaries to put Trump in the position in the Republican Party where he is now. It was the registered Republicans that did it. They did it to themselves. Now, I didn't vote for him in the primary, so I kind of get a pass on that, but many Republicans did, which reminds me a lot of the whole, you know, because they would say now, well, we're kind of surprised that all this is coming out now. We wouldn't have voted for him if it was such bad press back then, right? Well, you know, those of us were saying back then, this is the kind of person he is. You know, look at his track record.
Mm-hmm.
But it reminds me of the blindness that the Israelites had when God forbade them to go and get married. He said, don't get married with those foreign women because the next, you know, what's the next step? It's the idolatry.
Yep.
You're taking up their gods. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've all been in situations, you know, that situation when you're 18, 19, you just think, you know, can't see past the end of your nose, and this woman is the greatest. It just reminds me so much of the same idolatry pattern. And it's really, we have nobody to blame but ourselves, or, you know, in, if you want to call ourselves the Republican Party.
I don't want to call myself the Republican Party
anymore. Because certainly I didn't vote for them. But
no, nor did I.
I just got my independent slip in the mail.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So no human being, including even the best rulers, is free of this temptation. But some rulers and regimes are especially outrageous in their god substitution. After Augustus Caesar, the emperors of Rome became more and more elaborate in their claims of divinity with each generation, and more ineffective in their governance. Communism aimed not just to replace faith in any that transcended the state, but to crush it. Such systems do not just dishonor God, they dishonor his image in persons. And in doing so, they set themselves up for dramatic destruction. We can never collude when such idolatry becomes manifest, especially when it demands our public allegiance. Christians in every place and time must pray for courage to stay standing when the alleged voice of a god, not a man, commands us to kneel. This year's presidential election in the United States presents Christian voters with an especially difficult choice. The Democratic nominee has pursued unaccountable power through secrecy, most evidently in the form of an email server designed to shield her communications while in public service, but also in lavishly compensated speeches whose transcripts she refuses to release to some of the most powerful representatives in the world system. She exemplifies the path to power preferred by the global technocratic elite, rooted in a rigorous control of one's image and calculated disregard for norms that would restrain less powerful actors. Such concentration of power, which is meant to shield the powerful from the vulnerability of accountability, actually creates far greater vulnerabilities, putting both the leader and the community in greater danger. But because several of the Democratic candidates' policy positions are so manifestly incompatible with Christian reverence for the lives of the most vulnerable, and because her party is so demonstrably hostile to expressions of traditional Christian faith, there is plenty of critique and criticism of the Democratic candidate from Christians, including evangelical Christians. But not all evangelical Christians, in fact, alas, most evangelical Christians, judging by the polls, have shown the same critical judgment when it comes to the Republican nominee. True, when given a choice, primary voters who claimed evangelical faith largely chose other candidates. But since his nomination, Donald Trump has been able to count on the evangelicals, in his words, for a great deal of support. This past week, the latest, though not surely the last, revelations from Trump's past have caused many evangelical leaders to reconsider. This is heartening, but it comes awfully late. What Trump is, everyone has known and has been able to see for decades, let alone the last few months. The revelations of the past week of his vile and crude boasting about sexual conquest, indeed sexual assault, might have been shocking, but they should have surprised no one. Indeed, there is hardly any public person in America today who has more exemplified the earthly nature, flesh in the King James and the literal Greek, that Paul urges the Colossians to shed. Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. This is an incredibly apt summary of Trump's life to date. Idolatry, greed, and sexual immorality are intertwined in individual lives and whole societies. Sexuality is designed to be properly ordered within marriage, a relationship marked by covenant faithfulness and profound self-giving and sacrifice. To indulge in sexual immorality is to make oneself and one's desires an idol. That Trump has been his whole adult life an idolater of this sort, and a singularly unrepentant one, should have been clear to everyone.
All right, let's stop there. David, you say it all the time. Why are we surprised when unsaved people act unsaved?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
How did all these guys get behind him and issue these endorsements based on a momentary, quote, profession of faith. You remember, what was it, 8 weeks ago, 10, maybe 6 months ago, when Focus on the Family, what's his name?
James Dobson.
Yeah, you know, I got saved, you know. If the man is a new creature in Christ, we would really be expecting some huge changes that just have not happened.
One of that, shame for what he said in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, if he would have said, man, I was a different man back then, and I'm really ashamed of what happened. You know, that would go a long way.
Because I put my faith in Christ a year ago.
Yeah.
Instead, he goes, no, look, her husband, he did it too. He was just as bad as I was. Yeah. You're not coming after him.
His response to this whole thing has been, is almost worse than the tapes that were released. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and I remember we did that podcast a while. It's been a long time, but remember all those religious leaders gathered around and laid hands on him.
Yeah, came out and endorsing him, and
Robert Jeffress was there, and everything else. And Dobson, I think the funny thing about Dobson is he said that Paula White shared the gospel with him, and Paula White's one of the most heretical prosperity gospel prophetesses or pastrix or whatever you want to call her out there. I mean, even if Paula White shared a gospel presentation with him, do we have any faith that would have been even close to a biblical gospel presentation? And, well, I heard he accepted Christ. Oh, well, if you just heard it, then that's good enough for me. Let's throw our entire weight and support behind him. It's that hasty, pragmatic, you know, well, we can't support her, so we got to support him kind of idea. And the cart is now before the horse, which I think is what he's saying, is we put the government and political parties and you know, pragmatic solutions in front of the gospel.
Let me tell you guys a story. Middle of the 1990s. So some of you are just babes, I guess, right?
I was in middle school.
Middle school, that's old. Yeah, middle school's old.
I was 7.
I'm the NCO of the year for the 82nd Airborne Division. I'm a staff sergeant. I'm the NCO of the year for the 82nd Airborne Division. I get to travel with the commanding general, and I go to different functions where all the retirees are. So these are the old geezers from the World War II generation. They've got their walkers, they've got their crutches, and they're telling all the stories. They come together annually at different locations for these reunions. Remember, these guys are together in war for 2 and 3 years. Lifelong buddies. And they come back every year to see each other, to drink beer and tell war stories. And the commanding general and the NCO of the year and the soldier of the year and the 82nd chorus, we have to attend these events. And you go in there and you shake hands and you just kind of placate the geezers, so to speak. So we fly in, Black Hawk helicopters land, get on the entourage, you know, because it's the commanding general, 2-star general, get to the event. It's in Atlanta, Georgia. Go into the hotel, and the general is just, I mean, he is just amazingly shaking hands, eye contact, listening to them, just attentive, entertaining them. And I'm just watching this. You know, I'm a young soldier at this point, and I'm just seeing how this man is just glad-handing. And just, I'm thinking, wow, this guy is incredible. And I'm really upping my respect for the commanding general of the 82nd Airborne Division. The event's over. We get back in the truck, and we're in the truck for 30 seconds, and the profanities and the insults of all the people that he was just shaking hands and glad-handing with and commending, it was just two different people. I mean, it's virtually bipolar behavior. And I'm watching this going, how can you be that two-faced? How can you be? So all I can think about is, imagine what it would have been like when Trump is with all the evangelical preachers, David, and then he's done with them, and he goes back to his staffers, and here comes the F-bombs. Here comes the real Trump. That's the Trump that the campaign knows. That's the inner Trump. That's the flamer. That's the profaner. That's the idolater. That's the womanizer. And that's what's happening. You're not going to convince me otherwise. We've got two Trumps.
And I'm sure we have two Hillarys, too.
No question.
I don't know why we would put faith in any of these people.
No. Yeah. But Hillary is not professing to court the evangelical side. He is.
Yeah.
He is. And he's laughing all the way to every private meeting about he's duped people into thinking who he is.
Yeah.
You know, he's on Liberty University's campus. And then what happens when he leaves?
Yeah.
What does he say about those Christians?
After he's got Falwell wrapped around his finger, then he walks out of there and probably, you know, smirks about all that.
Well, you know, it's funny because we talked about the supremacy of Christ. Well, the supremacy of the gospel, of the Word of God too. The book that we esteem, the Word of God, says, "Beware, your sins are going to find you out." And you know, what awful timing! Could you go down more in flames? And we'll see what's going to happen. But I mean, this is just, if you were going to write out a script, this would not be the one that the Trump campaign would want to sign on to at all.
No, if there was a time that Cruz wanted this to come out, it was when they were locked up and yeah. It was the three of them.
Sure.
That's when it should
But we found out today from the WikiLeaks emails that Clinton was supposed to be putting her focus on Trump as the front runner. So they probably have had some of this information. How long have they had?
Yeah.
Put your focus on Trump, attack him like he's the front runner because he's the guy that we can beat. And now, slowly but surely, all the stuff comes out. It's very conspiracy theory,
and still the whole approach is that it's not, hey, Hillary's great, vote for Hillary.
Yeah,
the entire approach is Trump is horrible because nobody likes Hillary either.
No.
You know, her negatives are just as high as Trump's are. You know, nobody likes her. She's not likable. They can't win that battle. So what do? You save all this information for now to make Trump even more of a reprobate and even more of a, you know, whatever you want to call
it. And this is exactly what she does. She controls the spin game, like she's doing.
Yeah.
And all the stuff that's bad about her is shuffled under the rug. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, she lied about some emails. You know, she said some mean things about Bernie Sanders support.
It's just national security.
Right, you know, but at least she's not a, you know, anti-woman.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
Anti-everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what, to me, I guess where I am is, I don't know what my greatest fear is. My greatest fear, you know, having Hillary as a president, or the fact that all of the stuff that came out about Trump isn't going to really impact and that he could still have a chance.
Right. And Isaiah would say to you, fear not.
Right.
Fear not.
Of course. And I use that word fear loosely. But because it tells you where we are as a country, the fact that the man could say something like this and only take, a 10... 10-point dip.
Right, and still 42% of the people are going to vote for him?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, I saw after the debate, the only winner in the debate was that rocket ship that's now hurtling away from Earth at 16,000 miles per hour.
I thought it was Ken,
the biggest winner.
I thought it was Ken Bone or whatever his name
was.
Yeah,
that guy, the sweater guy.
Steve, you are silent, as though you're not even here.
Just being that wise old owl.
All right, very good. Some have compared Trump to King David. Continue.
Who did that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone who didn't know the Bible.
Nope.
Yeah.
But they have.
If David's hair looked like that, he never would be king.
Maybe absent.
He was just a shepherd.
Yeah.
Some have compared Trump to King David, who himself committed adultery and murder, but David's story began with a profound reliance on God, who called him from the sheepfold to the kingship. And by the grace of God, it did not end with his exploitation of Bathsheba and Uriah. There is no parallel in Trump's much more protracted career of exploitation. The Lord sent his word by the prophet Nathan to denounce David's actions. Alas, many Christian leaders who could have spoken such prophetic confrontation to him personally have failed to do so. David quickly and deeply repented, leaving behind the astonishing and universally applicable lament of his own sin, Psalm 51. We have no sign that Trump ever in his life has expressed such humility. And the biblical narrative leaves no doubt that David's sin had vast and terrible consequences for his own family dynasty and for his nation. The equivalent legacy of the Trump of a Trump presidency is grievous to imagine.
And my thought is, you know, what's the legacy of another Clinton presidency? You know?
There's no good answer, that's for sure.
Yeah, well,
He's going to great pains to bash Trump, which, again, I don't agree with much of Trump. And, again, he's, you know, from everything we know, he is unsaved, just like Hillary's unsaved. You know, but, again, you know, as you look at what they both claim they stand for, and they could both be lying through their teeth, but at least what they say in public, what they stand for, you know, I think a legacy of another Clinton presidency will be much more devastating to our nation than a Trump legacy.
Yeah, I would agree from a political standpoint. It's just she's not trying to wear the evangelical colors. And I think the point is he's much more damaging to the witness of Christ in the country. Sure. Because even though we know he's not saved, mm-hmm. you know, what the people outside are looking at it and going, this pastor still say he's a Christian. So
I'm not comparing Trump to Hitler and his deviousness. Yeah. But what I am going to make the comparison is what happened when German Christians overwhelmingly supported Hitler and continued to support Hitler almost right up to the end. The damage that they did to the name of Christianity in Germany. Hitler must have been a Christian because all those German Christians supported him. That's the danger. That's why I said if you got to vote for the guy, keep your mouth shut about it. Yeah. But don't defend him on Facebook.
You keep saying if you got to vote for the guy, so obviously you're not going to, Joey.
Oh, no.
Right. So are you just not voting at all?
Well, I haven't decided yet, but I know there's Evan McMullen is an independent. I know there's Gary Johnson who's a libertarian candidate.
Solid choices, right?
Right. I mean, and Johnson is not as pro-life as people would like, but he's going to cut the budget. He wants to rein in some of our
military.
And
he's never going to get elected.
Well, if he does well in his home state of New Mexico and a few other places where he's polling high, he could throw it to the Electoral College. If McMullen could win Utah and Gary Johnson wins two or three states, and he's pulling high in some states enough where he could get close to doing that, then it could throw things into it. And that's, to me, if I have a goal in this whole thing, is to try to end this two-party thing. The two-party system is what brought us to these two awful choices. And if we can break the two-party system and bring in a third voice, that would be beneficial to it. Because there is a more balance. These views that we take are so nuanced. You know, we end up in one ditch or the other, and we're forgetting that. If we really care about saving America, we're going to have to make some compromises to save America. And you may not get everything that you want. And right now, what I see is we're not making...
But do you understand that what you just articulated so well is exactly the position an evangelical Christian would say with regard to having to vote for Trump? He just said, there are some compromises we're going to have to make.
And I think that's the big choice that faces... let's not even say evangelicals. Let's just say conservatives.
Okay.
And that is, at this point, is the big gamble, the big choice. Am I going to go third party and try to stand on some sort of principle? Or am I going to be pragmatic and say, if we just all unite behind Trump, you know, we'll know what we're going to get. It's not great, but at least it's not Hillary.
I just don't know that you know what you're going to get with Trump. Because we did the article 2 months or so ago. Hillary's a known evil. Trump is. They're both. Who knows how bad they could, possibly be? And when I start talking about compromise, if Trump is so awful and Hillary's so awful, why don't we look to a third party candidate that maybe he doesn't check all of our boxes, but at least he's fiscally responsible, which neither Trump or Hillary are fiscally responsible, and maybe he's not where we want him to be over here, but maybe we can influence him in a way that we can influence the other two. That's what I mean by compromise.
You're assuming that the average American voter gives a flip about any of that, and I don't think they
do. No, they don't care about fiscal.
And that's the problem.
But conservatives, of all people, should care about fiscal. Because that was the issue for the Tea Party movement, was fiscal responsibility. And all that's just been thrown out the window now, for whatever reason.
Right, Joe, but you can't convince that 40% that's loyal... And let's be clear, I wholeheartedly agree with you with regard to, all right, I'm going in that room, I'm going to go into that box, I'm going to check something, it's none of your business what I'm doing in there, and I'm done. Okay? I got that piece. But with regard to money and managing money and making money and getting us back on the jobs track and less government regulation, that's where a lot of people feel like Trump's the man.
Sure, and I would say the guy has had so many things go bankrupt that how do you know that he's going to... I mean, another casino closed this week. How do you know that he's actually going to be fiscally responsible? Because everything he wants to do is add to the budget. He's not taking anything away from the budget. He's adding to the budget. He wants to deport 11 million people. He wants to build a wall. He wants to do this... That's another version of Obamacare, a more conservative-friendly version, but still this... $1 billion payout every year for health care. How is he actually going to cut the budget and make us fiscally responsible? That's where I don't understand the appeal to him, because he doesn't say any of that stuff.
And what annoys me about the whole thing, you know, as a voter, is that all they do is spend all their time lobbing insults and digging up dirt on each other. And that's what we've gotten to. And that, I mean, really, if you think about it, it should be possible. It should be possible to actually change the trajectory of your party if enough people get to work. For example, there's no reason that Christians who call themselves Democrats in some way couldn't rein in the Democratic Party if people would focus on the right things and doing the right things and working in the right area. I'm not saying it's going to ever happen, but I said even in that case, same thing with the Republicans, but at this point, I don't think that's going to happen, and I think that what is going to happen is that possibly this could be, not in this cycle, but the next cycle, this could be really the last breaths of the Republican Party from being anything but, and we're going to end up with three parties in 4 years.
Sure, it could very well become a split. It could be a Whig kind of Republican, but happened with...
I see that as a great possibility.
I'm not opposed to a third party. I just think we're way too late in the game now to even consider that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that the reason of the timing
if they'd started it, 4 to 6 years ago.
Well, they did start. They've been doing it for a long time. But the point that I try to make to that is, well, we can't vote for third party because they won't win. Well, we've been saying that for so long now. What if Ross Perot's Reform Party had done better in 2000? What if Ross Perot had, that would have brought in a third party to be, but we've never been able to take that leap, and that seems to have brought us to this point. And one way or the other, both of the parties is going to split, because the moderate Democrats are still, a long way from the Bernie Sanders Democrats, and the moderate Republicans are a long way on a long way from the Tea Party Republicans. They're just so divided. Both parties divided.
The split would come in the Republican side because there's too much at stake. Mm-hmm. Because the Democrats, if they have a president in office, you don't mess with that power structure. So I could see the Republican Party splitting a lot earlier, just because there seems to be such a divide.
No, it's pretty apparent that the Democrats are much more united. Mm-hmm. Than we are.
Yeah, I mean, with 18 presidential candidates for the Republicans, 3 for the Democrats.
I mean, you had a little bit of a uproar when Bernie got hosed, which he obviously did. When you look at all the stuff that came out with the DNC, but that's really blown over. I mean, Bernie came out guns blazing for Hillary after all that, and he just bought a $600,000 house, so I guess socialism is good, right. I wonder where he got all that
from. Well, everyone lives in a $600,000 home, right? Yeah. I mean,
that'll work in his system, right? So, they do seem a lot more united. I would agree with that.
Well, in California, that's like a 3-bedroom, 2-bath.
It's in New York, so who knows? Upstate New York.
I think the danger for us all, and the point that he tries to make, the one that's bolder, is there's a point at which strategy becomes in its own form idolatry. And even as I try to decide at what point do I compromise to even vote for a pro-choice candidate? What point do I compromise to vote for someone that's, what point by lending my name to someone, because somebody knows that I voted for this guy, God obviously knows, somebody knows. At what point do I soil my reputation if I put a Trump sign in my yard or a Johnson sign in my... At what point have I taken myself to becoming an idolater because I'm trying so hard to figure out how we can fix this system that really is never meant to be fixed? It's going to all be done away with anyways.
And I'm in the same boat you are at this point. Is about a month ago, I thought I could vote for the guy.
Yeah.
And I'm just not so sure anymore. I think there's some valid points here, and like you said, I would never put a sign up no matter what, but I just don't know if I can.
See, I'm tempted to. That's my Ron Paul guy. I mean, I had the sticker in 2008. I had the sign. I mean, I was all in for Bob Barr because he was a good pro-life libertarian. I mean, and now I realize it probably wasn't that's my nature. It's just I would like to throw myself all the way into this, but I know that there's That's not the where my focus has to be.
And, you know, you bring up an interesting point because a lot fewer people care what I think as opposed to what James Dobson thinks because right. he has a greater influence. And so, I mean, even that has to be weighed into your testimony and how you put that into perspective.
Mm-hmm. And that's why Jerry Falwell Jr. endorsing Trump was just
sticking firm to his guns this week and saying, well, because I believe in grace. Well, yeah, but you're so believing in grace for a guy that says he's never asked for forgiveness for anything in his life.
If just one of these guys would say, these guys are unbelievers.
He supported Mitt Romney, too.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed.
And again, I mean, it's not...
This is the first time that Liberty's ever endorsed officially a public candidate, because I didn't think that he had endorsed... Because he originally,
I think the university still separates.
The university didn't support him. They
although
made
when
it
the
very
president
clear.
Of the
university. Yeah, does it in chapel? Well, yeah, does it?
Yeah.
Right, but the board made it very clear that Jerry's view was not theirs.
Thankfully,
but Jerry Falwell, he stood behind Mitt Romney too, and obviously not because he's a Christian, but because he was a conservative, or the more conservative of the choice,
barely conservative.
Yeah. Well, and if that was the language they were using, I'd be okay with. It's this trying to put Christian window dressing on things that is the frustrating part. I mean, I would have said the same thing about Romney. Yeah, he's the more conservative choice. You know, we don't agree with him religiously, but he's a more conservative choice. But that's not the language we're hearing with Trump. You know, it's like, well, he's more Christian than Hillary is, and she's more Christian than he is. And it's that, I've seen people on Facebook talk about how Hillary's a Christian. And it's like, I don't know what you're looking at. I don't know what you're listening to.
What Bible are you reading?
I know she affiliates herself with the Methodist Church, but what does that mean?
But what American political candidate hasn't affiliated
with
himself?
Yeah, when was
the
last time you had an atheist running for president?
Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
That's the first one.
Well, that was on a major ticket. But you don't see it because, even though religion is gone by the wayside in this country, you still can't run for major office
we have a folk
without
religion.
God and country.
We have a folk religion in America now, and that's what it is.
Exactly.
It's God and country.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Is there anything else left, Brian, that we need to pay attention to in this article?
In this next couple paragraphs are what Joe just touched on about the strategy becoming idolatry.
The strategy to win, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that, I don't know if you touched on faith in here, but kind of the parallel is when Israel tries to align themselves with these other nations that are wicked, and it ends up ending in their own destruction, and the danger of trying to make these alliances could end up really backfiring on us.
Even though God told them throughout Deuteronomy,
stop,
don't do that.
Don't make alliances. I'm sufficient for you. You don't need them. And they keep making these alliances.
Yeah, but that's
point.
Not really the same as what we're looking at today.
Well, in some regards, I would agree, right? We're not a theocracy, but at the same time, the application of it is the danger of making these alignments could bring judgment, it could soil our reputation, and it could lead us into idolatry.
Right,
and the same could
be true of saying, well, Hillary got voted in. I'm sure, there'll be judgment for that as well.
Yeah, and I'm talking on a personal, at what point does the desire to win become idolatry? And at what point do we finally say, I'm done with the process? At what point does an American Christian say, you know what, this is so anti-Christian, it's so anti-God, that even going into the voting box now and putting my name down next to someone's candidacy is not good, and it shouldn't be done, and it's have no part with them.
Well, I think what you're gonna and I think the reality of that in years in the future we could see, because what are you seeing in the Republican side of things now? The conservative side is, well, let's just not deal with the social issues because we can't win on the social issues. The Supreme Court has spoken. And so what happens when we have, and the platform could change, and in 10, 12 years, we have a platform with two candidates that are pro-gay marriage, pro-choice, good for government involvement in abortions, overspending, that there is no policy things that line up with anybody. At that point, what do we do? There may be a time coming in the future where there is no candidate to vote for.
And it almost feels like that now, even as I contemplate like a Gary Johnson vote. I don't know if I can vote for Gary Johnson. He's so anti-Christian that I can't, I don't know. I mean, I appreciate his stance on the war and cutting the budget, but on other issues, He just is not a friend to Christianity. He's not a friend to the gospel. So I don't know that I can vote for him. Yeah.
So what do you say to the person who says to you, Joey, that a vote for either of those or a no vote is a vote for Clinton?
Well, I guess I would say I respect their conscience, but that I have to trust the Lord, that God is sovereign, and that my conscience is leading me not to do that. And that at the end, my goal is not keeping Hillary Clinton out of office. The end game for me is glorifying God with my political involvement and keeping the gospel pure. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'd say that's where I'm at. If you're going to vote for Trump and you have the reason as far as, you know, military or what he's, you know, money, as you brought up earlier, or the fact of I'm not voting for either. Like, never Hillary, never Trump. I can respect you, too, if you have the Bible to back you up and why you're not doing that.
I mean, we have to recognize that priesthood of the believer, don't we?
Right. I mean, and I feel like a lot of that's not happening right now. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, just shut up and get behind the man, would you? So Hillary does. There's a lot of that kind of sentiment, I think, at least on social media.
And it's,
no one said that to my face, but...
And it's a temptation, too, because of what we know about Hillary.
Sure.
Yeah.
It is scary.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I've got Christian friends that will say, they'll post on Facebook, you know, everything, but they'll post on there, I'm not voting for Trump. And they just get bashed. Mm-hmm. You know, people are just killing them on social media. And I'm just like, guys, you know, Jesus was definitely teaching about the kingdom to come.
Why don't they post on there, I'm not voting for Hillary? Yeah. Is there a reason why?
Maybe it's just assumed, yeah.
But I feel like I've had to say it, because the one time I shared something about Gary Johnson, I got just, like, hammered. You're going to vote for a pro-choice candidate. What about Hillary? I said, what? I said, I'm not. I didn't say I was voting for the guy. I'm just saying there are other options. Let's at least be informed about the decisions that we make. You know, there are people that out there that don't even know that there are three other candidates
on the broadcast.
Four other candidates on the ballot.
Oh, and I guarantee you, if you did a poll around the country of voters, at least half wouldn't even know who the two vice presidential candidates
are. And if you listen to
maybe 60 or 70.
When they call and do the polling, do you want Trump or Hillary? And I say, neither. And then they go, okay, four-way matchup now. Trump, Hillary, Johnson, Stein. Then it's like, now we get to the second.
Yeah.
You know, it's even misleading in the way they're trying to calculate the data. It's mm-hmm. it's all, the whole process is so frustrating.
Well, the whole broadcast process, the whole journalist process is so skewed. I mean, even
there's no such thing anymore.
Even
either side of the aisle.
Yeah.
When they bring up House Bill 2, the way that they say House Bill 2, you know, that discriminates against
anti-gay House Bill 2.
Yeah. No, you're calling it that.
Right.
But every broadcast you listen to on the whole dial, except for maybe BBN, is calling it that. And it's just like amazing how it just quickly gets accepted. Well, wait a minute. We haven't had a discussion about are they legitimately being discriminated against.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And here you you have the microphone. So my bigger question I wanted to back up is, how did these people get the microphone?
Hmm.
Right, and what slouching Gore and toward Gamora, Robert, the guy that Reagan appointed to be Supreme Court Justice, would say
Bork,
that they lost the sexual revolution in the 60s, and those college students became professors in the universities, and now they've infiltrated every public mm-hmm. university in America, and now they sent out their disciples, and they're the ones that had the microphones now, and that's how we lost the battle in education.
So one bright spot for me is this thing with Trump has brought back into focus how just because you're conservative is not enough for evangelical Christians. We've got to be biblical. And so I think that it's kind of brought it a little into focus, and maybe it's a little bit of a wake-up call, I at least hope, for the church, that we can't just ride this conservative thing. You know, we got to be. I mean, we can't just say, "Okay,
it's not 1984."
I'm not doing CNN. Let me go over to Fox. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, and back to the Israel. It's not. We're not putting our hope in strategy and trying to defeat an army or a person. In this case, we're putting our hope in the gospel, mm-hmm. and that God is going to come and through Christ and redeem this corrupt world. And at the end of the day, none of these parties are going to be standing in any country. No king is going to be left standing except for one. And this election should put us to our knees to pray for the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. And as Rob Scott said, I think so well, live righteously so we can encourage and bring the kingdom to fruition faster.
Yeah, I think the King James word is hasten.
Hasten.
Yeah.
Hasten the kingdom.
Yeah, hasten. But the gospel, Joey, doesn't tell me how to vote.
No, it does not.
No, and you know, Scripture gives us the right to follow our government and to vote as we see fit. You know, and we're encouraged to do that.
Yeah. And they sure have made it miserably difficult.
They have.
And in many cases, God decides to give wicked leaders.
And that's why Paul
right.
says,
but
pray
again,
for all
you know,
authority
the Israelites
to make
had a monarchy.
Life.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, they didn't have a choice. They couldn't vote. You know, so, you know, when God said, you know, don't align with other countries, you know, trust me, that's not the same thing that we're faced with.
Yeah,
you know,
we,
today
yeah,
we are
said,
faced with
we face that
four
individually.
Yeah, it's an
individual. We face that
application.
Individually, but not as a nation,
right?
Right. Yeah.
You know, so we still have to look at the choices and use the common sense that God has given us to decide. You know, each for ourselves, obviously. You know, who best portrays what we feel the direction that our nation needs to go in. And whether we support them openly or privately or how, you know, that's how we should cast our vote.
Yeah, and the one encouragement I think we could give really clear is say, vote all the way up to the top office in the land. Vote for your congressman, vote for your senate, vote for your mayor, vote for your county commissioner. Vote in those ways because if nothing else, at least you know that if you can keep two firm controls of these houses, no matter who gets president, they're going to have trouble moving because they're going to face this. And I think that's kind of the in my mind, that's, I guess, the way that I have to think about it is hopefully at least we can keep someone who is so wicked like Hillary by having a Republican House and a Republican Senate from being able to do all the wickedness that she wants to by voting at least right up. So I wouldn't say don't go vote at all. I would say go vote, but if you can't punch that ticket, don't punch that ticket. And then when they look at that, maybe the Republican Party will wake up in 2020 and finally do something different.
Well, and I think our options for president is horrible, but if you look at our governor, you look at our local officials, like we got some pretty good candidates that are good Christian people.
I'm proud to vote for Pat McCrory.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm very proud to
vote
for him.
But what bugs me, once again, I just go back to the stupid broadcast journalism thing, is they want to say, well, if you're a conservative, then you, first of all, you've got to agree with the man, the woman-hating stuff that Trump has done mm-hmm. and said. And second of all, that, you know, if you're anybody down line from him, now your chances are just ruined.
And
because they can't separate
mm-hmm.
Donald Trump and his stupid behavior from the ideology and the thought of the people who are running for House and
yeah, and
Senate.
The problem, the reason
Trump,
they do that is because so long conservative Christians have been Republican, and so they just automatically assume that if you're an evangelical, you're a Republican, mm-hmm. and you must support Trump.
And you would say, I'm not a Republican.
I'm not a Republican. I'm not a libertarian. I'm not a Republican. I'm a Christian.
I'm not sure how any Christian can say, I'm a Republican.
Right.
I can see how you may have to vote for a Republican.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. But that's different from saying, call me a Republican.
Yeah.
Right.
When you have a party that is just about as anti-God, anti-biblical
yeah.
as the Democratic
yeah,
Party.
So this is not 1984. This is not Reagan and Jerry Falwell anymore. It's not, even if that wasn't what it maybe was portrayed to be, it's
I mean,
not even
if we could go back to 92 or 96 with Bush versus Clinton or Dole versus Clinton, it would all be like a collective sigh of relief if we could just put those two candidates, it would feel so much better than what it feels like right now. It's gone so down the hill in the last 20 years, it's unbelievable.
Will we make a course correction, David?
Not in a major way, I don't think. I think it's gone too far. You know, I've said it before in the sense of I think it could be a good thing for the church. You know, I think it could unify the church. I think it could strengthen the church. It could certainly purify the church. But from a political perspective, and you've talked about some of this stuff too, some of the Prager University stuff and things like that. I mean, once that number of people on dependent on the government for a living goes over 50%,
you're done.
It's never going back. I mean, people don't give that up. You know, the original intent was, well, we'll keep people going until they can get a job again. Well, now people aren't getting jobs again. They're just staying on the assistance. And so if we get up to 55 and 60% of people on the government dole, and one group says, well, we're going to cut that, and the other group says, nope, we're going to keep that, well, it's done. You know, and elections become meaningless.
At least until we have an implosion like Greece or someplace.
Right. Which is inevitable down the line as well if they keep spending. Yeah. Yeah.
And the people rioted. I mean, in England, they rioted when Parliament tried to make cuts.
Yeah.
They couldn't handle it.
Yeah, you can't do that.
1,500 or something people yesterday stood in line for hours to get makeup food stamps to buy more groceries in Cumberland County because, you know, instead of using their insurance, probably because they don't have insurance, that's what they did. And now it's more money that gets forked out because of... And not that they don't have legitimate need, they don't need groceries, that's not the point. The point is, they're so dependent on the government that they don't know what else to do except for the government.
Mm-hmm. And that would be idolatry.
Right. Idolatry.
And you wonder, to what extent does God have stuff for us if we would just depend on Him?
Yeah, He has dirt. He has dirt and water and sunshine. Mm-hmm. And you put some seeds in there and you get something called a crop.
Yeah.
Right. Or you sell something so you can make an extra $30 and go to the grocery store and get the groceries that you need.
Yeah. Or you go find somebody whose property was devastated and say, can I clean your property?
and hopefully they'll give you something for it.
Yeah, you go buy a chainsaw, you'll make that times 10 in the week that you find work.
If you're willing to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are broke as a nation. Right. There's just no question. And that's part of why I think some people are going to go with Trump instead of Hillary. It's because in some form or fashion, mentally they think that Trump is going to be a little bit less in that direction. Whereas Hillary is not suggesting, even for a moment, that we need to consider cutting anything.
Yeah. And increase the number of immigrants and increase the number of this.
And college for free.
Yeah.
College for free.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, where's that coming from?
Put Trump University back in business.
That's right. They work together.
Well, you sure do have a tough choice out there. Joey's made his decision, but the rest of us are working through it. What did you think about Joey's perspective? Before he leaves out of here, let's hammer him with some comments on sermonaudio.com.
Get on Facebook and hammer him.
Yeah, all right.
I don't even have Facebook.
All right, and we appreciate you listening. We'd like to know what your thoughts are. The title of the article is Speak Truth to Trump. And somebody needs to tell the man that he's going to hell. That's the first step. I mean, that's the reality.
Yeah.
That's going to get his attention. No, probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not, because he doesn't think about those things. Why would you?
He's invincible in his mind.
When you got $1 billion, you don't think about that sort of thing.
No, you don't think about that, man. And I think our Lord said something about it's pretty hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.